Welcome to the Tribe of Testimonies. Here you will find conversations with faithful Native American members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, sharing their stories and their love of the Savior. My name's Andrea Hales. I'm Navajo, and I'm glad that you've decided to come and join us today. Today my guest is Curtis LeClaire. He is originally from Minnesota, and I met him at BYU Law School. He's a family man, and we talk a lot about family. We talk a lot about his father and mother and the way they were raised, and we talk a lot about Curtis and his children and his family that he raises. And so it was really nice. A couple weeks ago, we called and talked and caught up with each other a little bit, and I told him about this project, and he was excited to be invited and be involved. So it turned out to be a really nice visit, and I hope that you enjoy this time with Curtis LeClaire. Today I'm on the phone with my friend Curtis LeClaire. We met in law school a long time ago, and I am really glad that he's giving us this time today. Curtis, would you introduce yourself if you can in your language? If not, that's cool. There's plenty of people that can't speak their language.
No problem. And it is. It's pretty amazing that we've known each other for as long as we have, going back all the way to 2000, 2001, 2002, when we were law students together. It's been fantastic. So Andrea, thank you. I'm Curtis LeClaire. I am born and raised in Minnesota, and I have ancestry, and I'll talk a bit more about that, Native ancestry tied to the region. My grandfather was born on the Shakopee, Bedawakanton, Dakota Reservation. And my father was the tribal chairman of the Mendota, Bedawakanton, Dakota community. And in terms of introducing myself in my native language, it's funny because I speak Spanish and Portuguese, which is very common. It's very common in many families where maybe you have native speaking parents or grandparents, and very little of the language, if any, is passed on. It happens in all languages if there's not a focused and concerted effort. And so we don't speak any of the native tongue. And even my grandfather, who was born and raised on the reservation, didn't retain much of it throughout his life. But anytime I would call my dad for years and years, you know, I would call him up and he'd answer the phone, and I'd say, hey, bon dia, or I'd say buenos dias, or, you know, como va, or, you know, different greetings. And he would always respond with one of his rote Dakota greetings. Sometimes it would be good morning, haha nawaste, or Buenish Kadewabo, you know, different greetings. And I'm pretty sure he didn't know what he was saying, but I know he spent a little bit of time studying the language and learning with some of the tribal elders. So I'm glad to be here with you. Today I live in Arizona with my wife and our six children. We've lived all over the world and have settled in Arizona about 7 years ago.
Cool. Curtis, I would love if you could tell us something that you love about your heritage, whether that's a story, whether that is a celebration or a ceremony or tradition. What do you love about your heritage, especially if it parallels the gospel of Jesus Christ?
Yeah, I love that question, Andrea. And there are in Native culture and in my heritage, there are many parallels to the gospel of Jesus Christ. But the one that I appreciate and respect and admire most is the commitment and reverence for family and you know, keeping close-knit and closely connected families. Very much a big part of the Dakota culture, and very much a big part of the culture of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So that's one of the, you know, culturally and from a heritage standpoint, the fact that we, in fact, even the annual Mendota powwow is the coming home powwow. And I love that because it is all about returning to your relationships and recognizing and embracing the ancestral and familial connections and relationships that are so important and aren't just ancestral connections, but as we then, you know, parlay that or you know, convert that over to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Those are eternal relationships. And relationships that that we have faith and believe will continue forever.
That's so cool. What did you say that's called? That powwow is coming home powwow?
The coming home powwow. Yep.
That's really cool. I mean, think about that, how we always talk about in the church too, like when we pass through the veil back to Heavenly Father, we've been told that there will be a celebration with those that we love and that who love us, that it's a coming home. So that's really cool.
Yeah, reunions. Reunions are special, and that's what it feels like every year.
So you told me that your grandfather had a really cool conversion story.
Actually, my dad.
Oh.
Yeah, my parents are converts to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and so I was actually, you know, it's interesting the connectivity with religion and the American Indian people are often tied to missionaries and missionary work. And the LeClaire name ended up in the upper Midwest through French fur traders who came into, you know, into the lakes regions of the northern states, the north central states, and were trappers, but they ended up settling with the Native American communities and marrying, you know, marrying into those families, and that's my ancestry. So, a marriage between a French fur trader and a Native American woman, at a time when many, you know, many missionaries were coming into the area, Catholic missionaries and priests were, you know, I'm air quoting, were, you know, taming the savages, right? Or they're, you know, but they were bringing, and that reference was they were bringing Christianity to them, right? They
Right.
were helping, you know, but it's interesting because the Native people have always been a very spiritual people.
Yeah.
So nonetheless, it's, you know, talking about my parents' conversion story. So again, my grandfather grew up on the reservation. He left the reservation when he was 18 years old, and I can tell stories about the persecution, the discrimination that he experienced growing up on the reservation, just outside of Minneapolis and Shakopee. But my dad, and so there wasn't my dad growing up. There was hardly any connectivity to the reservation at that time, and he and my mom had been together for several years. They had married and had been together for several years. And I had an older sister who was 4 years older than me, and I was just a couple of years old. I actually wasn't even quite 2 yet, and one afternoon, my dad was he was home. He and I were home together. And it was one of those really, really cold Minnesota winter days. In fact, it was sub-zero. The missionaries were encouraged to not even leave their houses that day. The wind chill and the temperatures were dangerous. Yet they felt they needed to, and so they had been out for a few hours and hadn't really come in across anyone. And they looked across the street, and I'm retelling this, and the same story that's been told to me several times by these missionaries. And they saw this house and they said, all right, one last house. And you've heard that story many, many times, mm-hmm. right? But this is exactly the story. And they knocked on the door and they opened the door, and standing in front of them was this man who was in his mid-20s, and he had hair down to about the middle of his back. And he was wearing a white tank top t-shirt and had a Pabst Blue Ribbon in his hand. And they said, hey, this is who we are. We're missionaries. And he said, yeah. So the response was, I don't really have an interest in this stuff, but my wife loves to talk about stuff like this. So why don't you come back tomorrow? and so they left and they came back and they met my mom the next day. And my mom had grown up a very faithful and active Catholic and loved the church. And today still has a great appreciation for her upbringing and the foundation that helped that she was able to establish because of that upbringing. And my dad had some religion, wasn't a participant in any religion, but he kind of grew up in a split Presbyterian Methodist household. But these missionaries came and they started talking to my mom. And one of the things they led with was the same conversation we were just having a moment ago, the eternal families. And that really caught her attention. And so they started having conversations and they introduced the Book of Mormon to her. And my dad wasn't a participant in these conversations, but over the next several weeks, these young men kept coming back. And so my dad was paying attention, but, it first started, other side of the apartment, and then then he, kind of stood in the room next door and then in the doorway. And over a period of 4 or 5 weeks, he ended up, sitting at the table with them and having conversations and developing, more than anything for my dad, developing a great friendship with these missionaries. Mm-hmm. And their names were Elder Peterson and Elder Gines. And they continued to teach my parents and the testimony began to develop in my dad. My mom, as soon as she started reading the Book of Mormon, fell in love with it, embraced it, knew it was truth, and frequently found herself on her knees seeking confirmation of the truthfulness of the things that were being taught. And my dad was a little slower on that front, but saw that this was something that was changing them as a couple. What I didn't mention is during this time from my older sister's birth to my birth, the period of 4 years, they were separated for a couple of years. And so this was this kind of uniting factor that was helping both of them in their relationship together and helping them as individuals as well. So the story continues, and my dad would tell you, he passed a couple of years ago, but he would tell you that his entire life was a lifelong conversion process and story. But after a few months of meeting with these missionaries and they had started to come to church, my dad still had hair down to the middle of his back and learned the word of wisdom and learned some things that were very helpful to him because he wasn't very strong prior to that when it came to substances and chemicals and things like that. But they were sitting in church one Sunday, and their bishop, this was in the, I think it was the St. Paul First Ward in St. Paul, Minnesota, their bishop, whose name was Art Schmidt, he stood up and he announced that Kurt and Sandy LeClaire were going to be baptized this upcoming Sunday. And my dad looked at my mom and she looked at him and she was like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you. and it happened. My dad was baptized and my mom was baptized, and that was the launch of really new beginnings, which it is for many people, right? That day of baptism, that day of real conversion, when you first make that first covenant, is a new beginning. And from there, there's a whole nother history to be written, but including on many fronts. But my older sister and I were then joined by seven more children over the next 11 years.
Wow.
And so today, yeah, we're a family of nine children. My dad passed, unfortunately, from cancer a couple of years ago. But my mom, who just returned from missionary service in Albania, so she was actually in Albania during a part of COVID.
Wow.
But she is the grandmother of I 29 or 30 grandkids now. And I know, right? I should know that, but I've got my own six kids to try to manage. And so it's tough to keep up with all the grandkids too.
Yeah. That's an amazing story. And I am totally giggling about the, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you.
Quite a story, but yeah, an awesome one.
Yeah. So, that's pretty funny. So did you live in the same place for most of your life as you were growing up?
Yeah, born and raised in the Minneapolis, or I was born in Minneapolis and raised in the Minneapolis metro area. Never even got on a commercial airplane until I was 19 years old and headed to Provo, Utah to go to the MTC for missionary service. And so, yeah, when you have nine kids and you know, blue collar parents, you know, hardworking, diligent, faithful, but not educated. So my dad, actually through his church membership, was introduced. When he joined the church, he was working at a foundry, and you know, just miserable work, really, really hard. And through an introduction at church, was introduced to the flooring business, and ended up spending the next, you know, really 40 years of his life laying carpet and doing flooring. And he's known across all of the Minneapolis metro area, especially amongst members of the church. He's known for his work as a carpet layer, and he's laid carpet in many, many houses. But even the day that that he got sick, he was still laying carpet. So he was laying carpet on a daily basis at 67 and 68 years of age.
Wow.
So, yeah.
What a good
man.
Yeah,
so all in Minnesota. Yep.
Yeah.
A hearty Indian. That's literally how we talked to him. Talk about him. He was a hearty old Indian who just, you know, didn't have a stop button. He just kept going, going, going.
What a great man. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, he is. Thanks.
You said you've lived all over the world. Tell us some about that and how the gospel has influenced those decisions in your life.
Oh, I appreciate that question. It's a situation where, so coming out of law school, and you and I were there together. I was there for a year before you and a year after, or I think we graduated at the same time. But I did a joint degree. I did a JD and an MBA together. And then I joined a Fortune 100 company, very global company, and it just kind of put on my company hat. And we as a family just thought, this will be a great adventure. Let's go after this adventure and see what it turns into. And so for 15 years with that company, we relocated seven different times. We lived, we started in Arizona, then we went to Minnesota. It was great to be close to family. Then we went to New Jersey, and these are all 2 to 3 year stints along the way. And it was all career development, you know, kind of, you know, building that experience as well as exposing the family to different places and cultures and things. And we left New Jersey, went back to Minneapolis, and then we moved to London, England. And we were in England for a couple of years and really took advantage of that opportunity. And then from there, we moved to Arizona. That was in 2014. And really have been here since. I finally left that company. It was a wonderful company, great company for our family and for me professionally. And joined another company out of California as one of their executive officers, and did that for a little while. And then we came back to Arizona when I was done with that gig. And so we've now been in Arizona, like I said, we call it 7 years with a 1 year sabbatical to California. But it's been great for our family. It's been tough too. It's not it's not the easiest thing. I mean, people as you know, just you know, generally, our nature is averse to change. And so when we were doing it more frequently, it was easier and the kids were younger. As they've gotten older, we've really appreciated the need to plant roots and have some stability. And we love to explore and visit, and we spend time in Idaho in the summer times, and we have, you know, annual trips to, you know, to Mexico, and we've been back to visit Europe. And just and professionally, I've traveled all over the world for work. I've, you know, been on most continents, and you know, trying to contribute from that lens as well.
Cool. As you have globetrotted, have you been able to share both the gospel and your native heritage? How's that affected relationships with people, conversations, experiences?
Yeah, it's actually been a component of you know, not just my Native American heritage or my Scandinavian heritage, but also just what is important in appreciating and understanding people and how important they are.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, more than anything, Andrea, when I mentioned I was, you know, my first flight was at 19. That was on my way to Utah to be trained to go be a missionary in Brazil. So I spent 2 years in Brazil. And that was probably, I mean, if from a connecting the dot standpoint, being a missionary in Brazil to on the northeast coast of Brazil. So, you know, now when I say not one of the big cities, I was in a city called Recife. And there are 4 million people in that city. So it's a huge city, but it's not the São Paulo or Rios of the world. And so you know, my connection to those people was felt very much like a connection to a native people. They were humble, and they lived off the land, and they you know, were warm and caring, and just had, you know, so many great qualities about them. And so that experience really, I think, really helped me to develop an appreciation for people of all walks of life. And so, yes, to answer your question, everywhere we've gone, we've been able to share our ancestry. There's been a component of you know, an opportunity to talk about my native ancestry and just ancestry in general. Wherever we've gone, and it has helped to build relationships and help build connections within the church and amongst the church, and with a lot of other relationships that we've been able to establish. So we've always taken the approach to, you know, just to lift where we stand. And so everywhere we've gone, we've been willing to contribute and help both within the community, within the church, within the schools. And all of those things have helped to foster and build long-lasting friendships and relationships that I think have allowed us and enabled us to be able to influence people and have opened doors for us to share our beliefs and our values, our love for the Savior Jesus Christ, our love for and testimony of the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon. And all of those types of things have been very special for us.
So great. So you have six kids?
I have six children now, yes.
What are your age range of your kids, and how do they get along?
Yeah, so we've got a pretty broad range. So I have three sons to start with, and they are 18, 17, and 15. And then I have two daughters. They are 10 and 12. And then we have a 4-year-old son. So we have some space in between the last two. But yes, I mean, they get along in that they love each other dearly. In fact, my two daughters, Janie and Sadie, are the best of friends. And that's evident. And my three older boys are great friends and get along very well. Does it mean that we don't have struggles every day? No, we have struggles, and we have We have emotional struggles within within the family, mental health areas that we're always continuously paying attention to. There's always a lot going on. But I'll tell you, our little 4-year-old Luke has been a glue factor. He has been just a gelling factor amongst our family. And when he was born 4 years ago, we could almost see the transition in love and appreciation for what he brought to our family at that point in time. And it's been interesting, right? I mean, just when he was a year old, I was sitting in a priesthood meeting with my 3 older sons who, were all, 12 and 14 and 15. And I looked at him and I said, "Guys, do you realize the first time we bring Lucas to a priesthood meeting, Ethan, you'll be like 27 years old?" And it was just kind of a funny thing. But your question on family challenges is very timely, because we are dealing with just with the realities of how tough it is to be a teenager today, and the pressures of society and the challenges that they face in social media every day, and actively trying to manage the depression that some of those realities bring into the home environment. Those are real things, and it's a tough thing. It's hard. I've said in the last 2 years, I've said to my wife Becky, more times than the previous 17 years, it's hard to be a parent. It really is. But it's so worth it, and it's so important. And if you have an appreciation and an understanding for the grace of God and what the atonement of Jesus Christ really means, you can appreciate how important your role as a parent is, and how important your role as a sibling is, and how important your role as a human on this earth is, because we're all here to contribute in one way or another, and we all bring significant value in one way or another.
Thank you. So you're in Arizona right now. What calling do you have in your ward right now?
Well, again, we believe in, like I said, lift where you stand. And so in our church, and maybe it'll be mostly members of the church that listen to this, but if not, in our church, each congregation has a non-remunerated clergy, and that's everybody. So everybody in a congregation contributes in one way or another, and our assignments vary, and these are truly assignments. And I've been since we have been here, I've had a few assignments, mostly working with the youth. And I just spent the last almost 2 years actually leading research in family history and temple preparation activities. But just a few months ago, I was assigned to serve with our congregation leader, who's called the bishop, as one of his counselors.
Cool. And as a counselor, you do work with the youth, huh?
I do still
Yeah.
with the youth.
Yeah.
And actually, I appreciate it's interesting. I was earlier, as my kids were younger, I was always assigned to work with the youth. And then, as they hit their first years of being in the youth, I was, not as close to the youth anymore. I was then, assigned to work with the adults. And then, once they got back into youth, I was able to work with the youth again, which has been fantastic because I love that opportunity.
That's so cool. I'd love to hear about a testimony building experience that you've recently had, if it's not too sacred to share. Something that we might term in the church a tender mercy, or just something that has helped you strengthen your testimony.
When my dad was and maybe I can bring this back to Tribe of Testimonies, because I've come to appreciate that my dad was always very close to the Spirit, and he had very strong familial relationships, and he had experiences throughout his life where, you know, we would, you know, you would call, we would probably refer to them as, and they're for him, they're very sacred, and I won't go into a lot of those details, but, you know, call them, you know, visits and interactions with, you know, with people who have passed already, always spiritual. When he was getting close to the end of his life, so again, he was hardy. He, in, you know, great genetics, you know, at 65 years of age, I really didn't, but it seemed like I had more gray hair than he did. And, you know, I was, you know, 22 years younger than him, but, he was battling this bladder cancer, and we were all together for a family reunion, and all of us. And so that's all 9 children, all spouses, all grandchildren. We do this every other year. Again, you know, it's this coming home mentality, and we find it incredibly important. We believe it to be incredibly, incredibly important that we spend time together as families. So we, he had asked for a blessing, and he had asked for me to administer that blessing to him. And again, anybody that's listening to this, a blessing is very similar to how Christ blessed his apostles, where we place our hands, you know, on the head of the individual receiving the blessing, and we seek the guidance of the Spirit to know what to advise, and we do it through the authority of the priesthood, which is the authority to act in the name of our Heavenly Father. And in this blessing, I felt prompted. It was, again, it was the entire family, and a couple of my brothers were standing there and administering this blessing to him. And I stated his name, and I declared my authority, and continued to give him a blessing. And in this blessing, I felt prompted to advise him. The words that that the Savior used in the parable of the talents, and the impression came to my mind to tell him, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful unto a few things; that will make thee ruler over many things." And I paused for a moment, and I thought, you know what? There are many in this room right now that are not prepared to hear these words, and so I chose not to use those words in that blessing. And he passed away just 2.5 months later. But the next day he and I went for a walk, just the two of us. We just walked down to the corner store, and I thought, this is my opportunity to tell him. I told him, "Dad, I was impressed to share these words." And he said, "I appreciate you sharing that with me, because I want to share something with you." Said, "I haven't shared this with anybody either, but this last 6 months have been really, really difficult for me spiritually, because I have." These are the words of my dad. He said, I've been hearing the grandkids and all of you, and, you know, just praying in all of your prayers, praying for my healing and for my recovery. But what I haven't shared with anybody is that these last 6 months, I've been feeling a significant pull from the other side of what we refer to as the veil, right? From heaven.
Yeah.
And it's been, for me personally, conflicting, because I feel this pull to be on the other side, knowing that there are people for there that I'm needed there to teach and help the plan of salvation be made known to people on the other side. Yet there's such a draw and such a faith and a belief that I will be healed and, you know, be able to continue, you know, my mortal journey. And it's been this personal conflict, this spiritual conflict, this internal conflict. And so he said, it was very, you know, this is really important and really helpful for me to hear you say those words. Now knowing, you know, what one of my internal challenges have been. And for me, that was very faith building. I always knew that he was close to the veil. I always knew that he was close to His ancestors and his aunts and uncles, they loved him dearly. He was the, the source. It was, and he comes from a relatively large family too, for, the era that he was born. He has five siblings, so, or six siblings. He comes from a family of seven. So it was that was a really faith promoting and testimony building experience for me that I think, is probably a relevant thing to share as we talk about this, this podcast, or as we contribute on this podcast of Tribe of Testimonies.
Yeah, I love that so much. Have you experienced too, as you've served in the calling of family history, have you been able to help anyone else or even your own family find stories that have been meaningful and building to you as well? I don't know if you have anything better than what you just shared, but.
Now, it actually has been great as we've put a considerable effort into helping the members of our congregation, of our ward, find and record stories. And it's something that's actually always kind of been a part of who I am. So even on my wife's side, back when I was an undergraduate student, she comes from a fantastic heritage as well. She's a direct descendant of Brigham Young. Her great grandmother is Constance. Our great great grandmother is Constance Young, and so she's a granddaughter of Brigham Young Jr. Great history there, and then on her mother's side as well. I was able to spend some time with her grandfather, who was the first plastic surgeon in the state of Idaho. And I took this geriatrics class called gerontology. I took it in undergrad. It was the last sociology class that I needed, social science class that I needed to graduate. And I was one of the assignments was to interview someone and kind of, start a, collect a history of their experiences. And I chose him. His name was Dean Call. And it was a great, I loved the interaction and what I learned about him so much that it's kind of been something that I've done over the years. And so even my dad's dad, who just died, who passed away just the year before my dad, he was 96. But there are several interactions where we just sat down at the table and I turned on the phone and started recording him, and just asking questions. And he told us all kinds of stories and experiences of growing up on the reservation and growing up, as a Native American, and in a very kind of tough environment. But yeah, there, and I've loved to do that in my different assignments, working with family history as well, because I've learned so much about so many different people as they've said, oh yeah, I've got a story to tell about this, or oh, I remember my grandmother telling me a story about this situation. And I love it when they record those and they save them to histories or ancestry.com or wherever it may be. It's cool. It's a wonderful thing. I think it really does turn the hearts of the children to their fathers. And I think it really does start to create an appreciation for the eternities and how important they are going to be for us.
That's so cool. This past year with the COVID where we stayed at home, we tried to do a family history spotlight every Sunday with our own family sacrament meeting, and that I think it was so great for our kids and for me and my husband that we could just really actually get to know the people, not just be like, oh, that's a name, but find out some funny stories, some stories that are like, oh man, I don't know if I could even do that. And yet, if they could do that, then we could do that, right? So, yeah,
No
thank
doubt.
you.
I love that idea. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Now, yeah, this podcast is wonderful. I've listened to several other episodes and just wonderful stories. So thank you for giving me a chance to be a part of it.
So my last question for you is, what does it mean to you to know that you are of the tribe of Israel?
Yeah, I love that. That's a great question too. I'll say this. I'll answer the question first. It means everything. It means everything to know that there will be a gathering of Israel, that we are all part of a plan of salvation, that we will have the opportunity to make whole, to apply the atonement in its entirety, as we as we prepare for the opportunity to return to our Father in heaven. So it means everything, and I'm so grateful for that knowledge. There's so much more to it than just that, but that's the foundation right there: the atonement of Jesus Christ, and how that makes the plan of salvation and the gathering of Israel and understanding those promises that were made to Jacob and Israel, understanding that how those promises are going to be fulfilled is so meaningful, and I'm so appreciative of that.
Thank you, Curtis, for your time. I really enjoyed this. It's been fun to get back together, even if it's on the phone. So thank you.
For sure, Andrea. It's a pleasure of mine as well. And I look forward to continuing to listen to these wonderful episodes. And congratulations on all the good that it does.
So I went to a funeral this weekend, and it was sad. He leaves behind a wife and three kids. And it's going to be hard for them due to this COVID time and just life in general. I was the only family on the wife's side. She's my cousin. I was the only family that was able to attend in person. And I actually couldn't decide if we should go or not, because I didn't know if she wanted me there. I just didn't know. But I'm really glad that we went. She was my sister growing up. She had a sister. I have their sisters, and they are my sisters. And sometimes I got jealous that they had each other, because I always wanted a sister, and I didn't get one until I was 15. But, so I was really glad that we did go, because she was my sister and I wanted to be there to hug her and just be there. And like I said, I was the only one from our side of the family that went. And it turned out to be a blessing, because right now she's staying with my cousin's staying with some friends who have taken her in and are helping her until something changes. It's her bishop and her bishop's wife. They've taken my cousin and her three kids in, and they don't live in a big home. They live in a double wide, and my cousin had her kids and then couple of her siblings and some of their kids, so there were plenty of us for a double wide to be visiting and hanging out. But I think if there had been more of our family coming, I wouldn't have got that time with her to just sit next to her. There are some things that happen in your life that as they happen, you don't really know why it happens like it does. Like, for instance, with Curtis's interview, I I ran out of questions. Like, my mind went blank. And then he answered me. He filled it in and he shared testimony that we all needed to hear. And as I thought about his interview later, I was like, man, his testimony is so much about family and family unity and family history and learning from family. The theme of this was family. And I didn't know that's how it was going to turn out. And this weekend with my cousin, I didn't know that's how it was going to turn out, that I could have that time with her. I just have to say that Heavenly Father is watching us and he's in the details and he's helping us when we need help and he's sending the right people when we need the right people and he's sending angels when we need angels. And he loves us. He loves us as individuals and he loves us collectively as his children. I hope that as you look back on your week and on your day, that you're able to look and see the tender mercies. And I hope that you're able to recognize God's hand. And I hope you have a super wonderful, awesome day.
Tribe of Testimonies is not affiliated with The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The music is a traditional hymn, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, arranged and performed by Kyle Forsyth. If you know someone who might be interested in being a guest, please reach out to me at tribeoftestimonies@gmail.com.